This is News in No Time at Gordon on today's roundtable, Blair's Crackdown and Roberts and Civil Rights, from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. Karen Nagasaki joins us. She's president and executive director of the National Asian Pacific American Legal Consortium. Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, joins us from our New York bureau. And joining us from Knoxville, Tennessee, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Folks, thanks very much. Karen, welcome. And let me start with the idea that many people are taking a look at Tony Blair, prime minister in Britain, who is now instituting and unveiling sweeping anti-terrorism measures that will, in fact, allow him to deport radicals, even at the expense of human rights. This, of course, is part of the issue that London is facing based on the last month and the bombings that we've seen. Yeah, he plans to ban two Islamic groups, as well as bringing new powers to expel and exclude foreign nationalists who incite violence. Karen, let me ask you, as you look at this and what many see as the erosion, continued erosion of civil rights, not only there, but the possibility here in this country, what's your thought?
Well, I think he's taking all the worst lessons from what the United States did after the terrorist attacks on 9/11, and unfortunately not learning the lessons that we have learned over the last 3 years. When you choose to erode civil liberties in a way that isn't really going to help make London or England any safer, and that's the sad reality.
George,
I thought one of the interesting...
Karen,
yeah, one of the interesting things is some of the people in the United States are saying that they're not even considering some of the actions that Blair has taken because they know that, in fact, it isn't going to help protect you against those kinds of attacks.
Well, sure. That's a tough balancing act to do. I mean, obviously, he can't just sit there and not do anything. So the key always is trying to balance the issues between liberty and security. And there's also the possibility that this action might just further inflame tension. So that's the risk you run, but he had to do something.
Michael Myers, don't politicians and leaders like Tony Blair really find themselves between a rock and a hard place? As George suggests, you have to do something, but the catch-22 is whether that something, as Karen has already noted, will in fact do something, change things. Of course, you'll be up against civil libertarians who will say that you can't do it.
Well, a lot of politicians, when they find themselves in trouble in the polls, have a panic attack. I don't regard what's happening in Britain as a national emergency as much as it is a national panic attack. I've often wondered what happens to long-haired hippies when they grow up. Blair is a person who has, it seems to me, declared intolerance for hate speech. Now, there is a difference between Britain's culture of free speech and the United States' culture of free speech. We would not ban so-called hate speech. Mr. Blair has now made a declaration of intolerance for so-called hate speech, even to the point of threatening to expel what he calls preachers of hate and targeting Muslim ministers and the like. But even worse than that, the threat is that they will regard human rights covenants as mere pieces of paper to be torn up. He says and admits, and these are his words, we're changing the rules. And they are prepared to even change the rules with respect to amending the human rights law in Britain as they have been interpreted by the British courts. This is a national panic attack, and I do not see it as crackdowns on free speech, that is, as being anything that is going to create, quote-unquote, real security.
Mm-hmm. To follow up on Michael's point, you know, Blair said he's going to close down the places of worship, bookstores, websites. I mean, in the end, you know, you wonder who wins in the end. I mean, are you going to alter your basic form of government? But at the same time, you certainly got to protect yourself, but you got to really be protective in the sense that the prime minister is not the one to decide this by himself.
But as Karen says, the crackdown on free speech, or as Michael Myers said, the crackdown on free speech is not giving you any more protection. You drive it underground.
Exactly. What they should be doing is what the U.S. has finally started to do, and that is look at how do we strengthen our intelligence capabilities? What do we need to do to be able to figure out who the bad guys really are? And this wholesale attack that's just based on religion and ethnicity is clearly not the way to go.
In the United States, we would call it unconstitutional.
We would call it unconstitutional, Michael Myers, but we are also seeing and hearing from politicians, those who you suggested panic oftentimes when election time rolls around. But we are seeing these kinds of issues and questions being raised and resurrected. Some will suggest that that many are taking the kind of cowboy boot mentality that the United States tends to take in these situations and saying, you know, civil liberties be damned, we're going to protect ourselves.
Of course. The USA Patriot Act is an example, a manifestation of a national panic attack. The New York City subway searches and seizures without regard to the Fourth Amendment, without reasonable suspicion and much less probable cause, stopping people and looking in their bags as they have millions of people go on to the subways. Bloomberg is also in trouble. He's another politician who's in trouble. So what do? You declare a permanent yellow alert or a permanent orange alert. You get people whipped up about their fears and their insecurities. I think this is just posturing, empty posturing. And it's dangerous because unless people believe in freedom and exercise their freedom, as opposed to giving them up and saying, oh, yeah, I search my bags, unless the courts are going to enforce the constitutional guarantees, then they are pieces of paper to be torn apart.
Exactly. And, you know, as someone whose parents were interned during World War II simply because they were Japanese ancestry, they were both born here. In fact, my dad's mother was also born here and swept away just because they were that was her ancestry. One would think that we would learn from those mistakes. And there's so much more that we could be doing as communities. He should really be reaching out to the Muslim, South Asian, and Arab communities there and saying, how do we work together to make sure that we can root out the bad people, as opposed to what we're talking about even in New York, where you have people on the city council calling for racial profiling and saying, well, you know, we know Swedes aren't doing anything wrong, so we should let them go. But everybody else is a Muslim suspect unless proven otherwise.
And how do you use free speech to answer bad speech?
One of the things that's interesting
is
we
get the support from the Muslim community. And that's something we've seen here. I mean, it has been called for a long time. Finally, you're seeing key Muslim leaders who are denouncing that. And I think that's an important element of it.
Let me turn our attention to another look at civil rights and civil liberties, this time as we look at the makeup, of course, of the Supreme Court, and as people turn their attention to John Roberts, the nominee to fill the vacancy on the court. In the vetting process, and of course, as the media tends to do, unearth and overturn questions of the past. We are now seeing that Mr. Roberts helped shape the debate of the civil rights groups and organizations and the tone and tenor of civil rights in this country during the 1980s, where he would write memorandum for the Reagan administration talking about the right to oppose new provisions at that time in the Voting Rights Act that had just passed in the House. We know that he wrote op-ed articles for his then-boss, Attorney General William French Smith, circulated talking points as well, warning that Congress, by trying to make it easier to prove voting rights violations, was on the verge of creating, quote, a quota system for electoral politics, end quote. Again, so much being made of this man. Some suggest a wolf in sheep's clothing because his demeanor is not that of a zealot, yet there are those, George Curry, who suggest that this is a hardline conservative and that people need to take a real look at him.
There's no question that he's a hardline conservative. He, despite his denials, he listed in the directory of the Federalist Society, which is just trying to just take over, hijack the whole legal system, and has been for a while. You know, so they try to make the argument, well, he was doing what he was supposed to do as an employee. But there are some things that are extremely troubling when he's talking about those talking points, which you just mentioned a while ago, and for his non-support of the Voting Rights Act and saying it was going to be a quota system for electoral politics. You go down and look at his other writing as well, and there are always these kind of disturbing things there, just as people suspected.
Yeah, he's played, it's clear from the papers that he was not just expressing the views of a client, the Attorney General, that he was clearly expressing his own views. The reports are about the angry notes that he's written on newspaper articles, so it wasn't just expressed in sort of reasoned memos that he was asked to give. And this is a real pertinent question because several of the key and strongest provisions of the Voting Rights Act are set to expire in 2 years. So there will have to be reauthorization. And we all expect that there will be a constitutional challenge. And his perspective specifically on the Voting Rights Act is important because at this point, not only does it need to be reauthorized, but several intervening Supreme Court decisions, one of them with a 5-4 vote, has severely undermined the current law. And so we're going to need to strengthen it. And his views on this will have real life implications 3-4 years down the road. Well, I think the other thing is it's not just the voting rights. His positions on the treatment of immigrant children, his positions on the power of the federal government to act to end discrimination, whether it's based on gender or in one case that he worked on a disability, those are all questions for fair game. And I think the administration can't say on the one hand, look, that was then, this was now, and then do what they're doing now, which is saying, but we won't let you see some of the more current papers that might show his views 10 years down the road.
Well, the issue is not his views. The issue is not whether or not he's a conservative. Sandra Day O'Connor was a conservative. For me, the issue is not whether he is or was a member of the Federalist Society. I mean, nothing's wrong with that. For me, the issue is that during the 1980s, when there was a period of retrenchment on civil rights, the man showed an outright hostility, open contempt for civil rights. He argued against the expansion of civil rights, the protection of civil rights. He not only did that, he even suggested that you could strip the courts, the federal courts, of their jurisdiction over school busing cases and over school prayer cases. To strip the federal courts of their jurisdiction means you make the federal courts powerless to hear discrimination complaints, to hear controversies under the federal constitution. This is a judicial approach, I suggest, that makes him not a conservative, but makes him a radical, makes him a militant person who attempts to reverse civil rights gains and protections. And if anybody needs protection of the federal courts and the Constitution, the only way you can get it in a system where the majority is against minority rights, or in a system where the president is hostile to civil rights, the only way you have an avenue for redress and to get correction and remedy is the federal courts. So if this guy is that kind of a radical, then we must know the racket. We must know his judicial approach as opposed to whether or not he's a conservative.
Well, I agree with you, Michael. And equally troubling is he proposed requiring that proof of discrimination that was intentional. Now, how can you prove that somebody intended to do something? I mean, you're right. He's absolutely radical. And I do suggest, however, that being a member of the federal society with an agenda for the courts is a very clear view of what his views are.
Well, I think it's equally interesting.
I want to preserve the rights of the people from the ACLU to get on to the federal courts and the United States Supreme Court.
Well, I think it's
happening anytime, Michael.
It's also important to see who's lined up for him, and when you have groups like Operation Rescue enthusiastically embracing the nomination, you know he's not just any moderate conservative. And again, this issue of stripping the courts is really important because Congress just passed a law that would allow that would strip the right of the federal courts to look at how immigrants are detained. A very basic issue of what is the power of the state to detain someone indefinitely. So these are things that the court will be looking at, whoever the new Supreme Court justice is.
All right, with only about 3 minutes to go, I'll skip one of the issues we were going to talk about and save it for tomorrow and get to something that was interesting. We just want to talk about the civility or lack thereof on TV and in the media today. We saw Robert Novak walk off the set of CNN, a live broadcast there last week, Inside Politics, as well as using the S word as he walked off. He has been suspended for 2 weeks by the network. He has apologized. Of course, the network apologized to its viewers. But Michael Myers, does this speak to the lack of civility once again that we're seeing on airwaves today?
No. What we're seeing on airwaves today is a lack of standards. Bob Novak and Jim Carville, the guy he was debating, they have a history of butting heads. They had a history of butting heads on that awful talk show Crossfire, where they actually rang bells as if people were fighting. Look, these are two American enemy combatants. These people know exactly what they're doing. They're showmen. Mm-hmm. They are two showmen butting heads on TV. Novak's walking off a TV show with either a temper tantrum or a cynical publicity mm-hmm. stunt, or both, perhaps. If either or both, then the walk-off should have been regarded as a breach of his contract, not to come back.
I think Karen? It's a problem because this is exactly why the American public is losing its respect for journalists. And that is a very sad and scary way for us to be going, because we rely on journalists to really provide and dig deep and give us thoughtful analysis. And now you just have food fights and mud fights and grown-ups acting like they're from kindergarten, and that is just going to further lower the discourse that we see on the news today.
Well, I don't call this journalism, Karen, certainly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're going to give him a timeout as though he's some kind of little kid. I think what really got underneath his skin is he was going to be asked about the leak in the Valerie Plame case with the CIA, and he was the first one to report it and basically been flying under the radar screen while journalists go to jail. He knew in advance that he was have to talk about that. And that was a convenient way for him to get out of it.
Yeah, but that's exactly why. Why is he getting a free pass? Why are all the other journalists letting him go when clearly he's at the center of the controversy, and yet so little pressure has been brought to bear on what he knew and when he knew it?
But he was not under contract to answer that question. And although he knew the question would be asked him, he was not on contract to answer it. And Bob
Novak not under contract
to answer
it, Michael Myers. But the question is, the way he handled it is the question of the day. But we are out of time to continue the answer to that. So my thanks to Michael Myers, George Curry, and Karen Narasaki. And Karen, let me say to you, welcome. Glad to have you.